The UNLV Sports Network from Learfield. This is the Dan Mullen Coaches Show, brought to you by Findlay Chevrolet. Findlay Chevrolet is home of the number one volume Chevy dealer west of Texas. And by Parkway Tavern, the official home of the Rebels on the road, and the Dan Mullen Coaches Show.
Here we go!
Now, here's your hosts, Caleb Herring, Steve Cofield, and the voice of the Rebels, Matt Neverett.
All right, let's get it going. It's the Dan Mullen Coaches Show here tonight on 1230 KLAV The Game. Also, our live audience here at Parkway Tavern 215 in Flamingo. We welcome you into another edition of the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. My name is Matt Neverett, along with the former Rebel quarterback Caleb Herring. Steve Cofield also in the house. Our studio, or our on-site engineer, is Jared Justice, with Griffin Kemp back at the Lotus Broadcast headquarters. And, of course, one more guy with us up here at the dais. Everybody, please join me in giving a big hand to the head coach of UNLV football, Dan Mullen himself. And, Coach, we welcome you in. Yeah. You and I are both making our return to the airwaves this week here.
Yeah, last week with the short week game, and that was always a different travel, always a crazy schedule when you're playing on the short week, trying to get it all crammed in with less time. So I think Hunky did okay, though.
Hunky always does great. Hunky makes me want to run through a wall just having a conversation walking through the hallway. For our live audience here, $2 Miller Lights during the show. Of course, we end at 8 o'clock local. Happy hour with half-price apps from 3 to 6 before the show starts. So no show next week with the bye, but come on out in 2 weeks to celebrate the Dan Mullen Coaches Show with some half-price appetizers. Oh, UNLV 2-0 so far after the win on the road at Sam Houston. We'll break that one down in some more detail throughout the show. We'll also talk about the upcoming matchup, one of the highly anticipated matchups in this year's schedule, as the Bruins of the Big Ten and UCLA come to Allegiant Stadium this Saturday evening. We'll also hear from James Famenu. We'll hear from the reigning Mountain West Defensive Player of the Week, Amaris Brown. We'll talk a little bit of offense with the quarterback, Anthony Calandria, also being named the Offensive Player of the Week in the conference. But, Coach, welcome back. Want to start by looking backwards. A 38-21 win over Sam Houston last Friday night on the road. And we want to get started right off the bat at the beginning. It was a 24-7 halftime lead in the game.
Yeah.
Offensively, the Rebels came out firing on all cylinders, scoring on their first three drives. The fourth drive from scrimmage with halftime stopping it. Anthony Calandria also completing his first six passes. So that pre-prescribed 10 to 20 plays to get the game started went well. How close did you stick to that initial game plan that you went out there and tried to execute on Friday?
Yeah, we did. You know, I mean, we kind of came out early in the season. You don't always know how people are going to play you. There's not a lot of film. You know, they're a brand new coaching staff. But, you know, you're trying to study it. They played a game like we had, so we had a little bit of film on them. But we stuck to it pretty good. I think our guys came out, executed really well. I was pleased, you know, that, as you said, you know, you want to come out. I want to come out and be efficient. And, the nice thing is we were efficient. Guys made good decisions. Guys did what they were supposed to do. But we also were able to make some explosive plays down the field, which is important, for us as well. And, so you're really pleased, like, with how that whole first half goes, especially offensively, with the scoring. But besides the end of the half, we got the ball deep in our own territory with a little time left. We decided to just go to halftime and scoring every single time we had the ball. That's the efficiency you want to see. You know, the one bad one is the one drive that we only ended up with. We scored 17 points on the one drive, had two touchdowns called back because of penalties, which that's what you can't do if you as you continue to get into bigger games as the year goes on.
Mentioned it that Calandria got Offensive Player of the Week in the Mountain West Conference this week. Efficiency was the name of the day for him, the percentage completion-wise, but also efficiency within the offense. There was a couple times he got up to the line of scrimmage and was barking some changes out that I think are showing his growth week zero to week one. You mentioned during the offseason kind of spoon-feeding them, slow-feeding them the offense until they get comfortable. How have you seen his comfort in that regard, getting the offense into the right play?
Well, I think he's done a great job of that, of understanding. I think that comes from the experience of having played before, not being a first-time guy on the field. He's a first-time guy in our offense, and he's a first in the system, first-time guy for us, but he started games and started big games before. So that comfort level of understanding the game plan, getting us into plays, I think is huge.
Early down success was huge as well. You look at third down conversion rate, staying on the field, putting together long, extensive drives. But a lot of it stems from the early down success that you guys were able to have offensively.
Absolutely. You got to be good on first down. You know, you have to. You're not going to make a living on third and long all day long. So, and I think, for our guys – you know, once you get less than third and five, that entire playbook's open. You know, I mean, you run, throw, the play action, the sprint out, the QB runs, all of it's open, and it makes you a lot harder to defend than when you're in those third and long situations.
Philosophically, there's difference on what first down should be used for in terms of run, pass, and percentages, and you can do a whole analytic breakdown of the success rate on first down based on the type of play, pass or run. What has been your sort of philosophy and what is your thinking in terms of what your playbook allows you to do on first down to make sure you have early down success?
Well, I think you always want to have a balance on first down, right? I mean, I think that's a big key is, you know, and it is the other one to be careful of is if first down's not successful, people are really kind of made a lot of times will tip their hand on second down. We try not to do that, you know, so. But when you're on first down, you're always trying to look at success. What's the balance of, you know, shots? Hey, if we're going to take a shot down the field, okay, that's fine. Let's have a great second down plan. In case, you know, if we hit it, good, we're rolling.
Right.
But if not, what's the second down plan? Hey, are you going first down play action? You going first down run? Are you mixing it up? What's the balance inside-outside run, the play action passes? There's got to be a lot of balance in everything you do to have success on first down. So you spend a lot of time on that, on getting, especially early in the drive. You know what I mean? It's not just the first down. You want to get the two first downs. Once you get two first downs, you're kind of rolling it in rhythm. And so it's what are you doing within a drive to get those two first downs to get the rhythm going for the offense?
You talk about the balance of the play calling on first down, but taking the step back, looking at it from a macro sense, what have you thought about the balance run versus pass, whatever ratio you would like? As far as the play calling so far from Corey Dennis, you were asked earlier in the week how often you had been chiming in on the play calling, and you said not too often. Have you been happy with the balance so far overall?
Absolutely. You know, and I think he and I are getting used to it and getting comfortable within a program because you want – you know, you got to look at – there's different situations when we want to take chances, when we might want to be a little more conservative. But I'm pleased with our ability to move the ball. You know, I mean, you look at that with the exception – you know, you look at that last game with the exception of the two drives in the third quarter where we, you know, we just weren't good. And both – and, you know, we had the interception and then got stopped on the short yardage, which was really disappointing. With a, you know, missed assignment, missed blocking assignment. So, you know, the missed assignment, allow them to stop us in short yardage, very frustrating. A two-play drive with an interception, you know, with an Anthony in that scenario. I'm okay with him taking the shot, but know the game situation. He didn't need to take that chance in that situation. Others, you know, it's not like, hey, that was a bad throw, bad decision. It's understand the decision in the whole makeup of where we are at what stage of the game. You know, and then we don't recover an onside kick. I think that was the biggest play of the game, is not recovering the onside kick. You know, that was disappointing. So, you know, you're really looking. You know, I think we only ran like 58 plays on offense, which is really disappointing. But we did have a pick six. That kind of hurts a drive. You don't recover an onside kick. That hurts a drive. And then you have the three and out and the two-play interception. I mean, you know, and so like offensive guy, you know, I went to the offensive guys. Like, coach, I want to get more touches. Say, good, stay on the field. Recover, hey, recover the onside kick. Let's get us first downs, and everybody gets more touches. And it's interesting about the assignments of things of guys understanding the big picture of the game. You know, it's like, hey, you know, if you're a receiver, if you get five catches in a game, that's a pretty darn good game. But if you're playing 50 plays, that means 45 other plays. You better be doing something other than catch the ball, and you better do it really well, or you ain't going to get your five catches. And, you know, so I think that aspect of the offense and the whole team, just that efficiency throughout an entire game is important.
Offensively, the balance between efficiency in the short yardage situations and then the explosive plays. It's become a part of sports in general, the explosive plays, the plays that are extended downfield. It seems like Jaden Bradley has become the guy that's generated a lot of explosive plays for the offense. Is that by design, or is he just finding himself down the field and that chemistry between he and the quarterback?
He does by position. He's kind of, I mean, he can take, he got speed and size and can take the top off of coverages. But also it's matchup based, right? You know, and I mean, they're giving him, if you know, he's running the big posts and they're going to give him one-on-one coverage, I mean, and leave the DB one-on-one, we're going to take that opportunity. And he's done a really nice job of making the big catches when we've given him those one-on-one chances down the field.
defensively, you've also put your secondary in situations where they have a lot of one-on-one opportunities down the field. And they've come down with some interceptions this year. A standout performance, again, from Amaris Brown. He was the defensive player of the week for the Mountain West as well, responsible for the pick six. Defensively, I thought for 2.5 quarters, maybe 3 of the ball game, if you talk about the total minutes, a much better performance from week 0 to week 1.
Yeah, exception of 2 plays, to be honest with you. They had 2 fourth and ones in the fourth quarter. On those 2 plays, they got 112 yards of offense and 14 points. In the other 72 plays of the game they ran, they had 220 yards and 7 points.
Wow. Hmm.
So, you know, and both of those came in the fourth quarter. Two opportunities. We had a guy miss a gap on the fourth and one, or we would have had to stop. And then we, you know, misjudged the tag. Just got to get the guy on the ground on fourth down. We kind of get our eyes in the backfield, poor eyes on our corner on that play. You know, that's the thing that we talked about. I think we took huge steps from week 1 to week 2. And then we got into the little attention to details, because you're looking for 85% of that game we dominated. Unfortunately, for the 15% we didn't, when we were good, we were really good. When we were bad, we were really bad. I mean, you give up 112, like, so I don't know what I was told there'd be no math tonight, but I put 220 plays on 7 yards on 70 plays is what's like 2 yards a play.
Yeah. If there's math involved,
right? You know what I mean? It's like two to three yards a play, and then you know, give up 60 yards on 2 plays. You know, average. That it is that consistency. The same offensively. You know, when we were rolling, they never slowed us down. We just went up and down the field at will. You know, and then when we weren't, we kind of like just stop ourselves, and then it's like, and it's nothing.
I love the sound effects that describe it, because everybody knows what it is. There's really not a word for it, but just sputtering.
I mean, everybody watching at home is like, whoa, that was tough. I'm like, I feel the same way on the sideline. I'm like, that was terrible.
Hey, no math on my show, but I do know that is an onomatopoeia sound that relates a feeling like that. So we're going to add it to the dictionary. We've talked a lot, Coach, here in the early stages of the season, about the development of the offense and how it's come along. Before we take our first break, wanted to ask you about how you felt the development of Paul Gunther's defense has come along, because that was a big topic in the early part of the season, in the preseason even, was how that NFL style with a lot of the communication and individuality would play out. What's been your assessment of the defense as far as the communication and how those things have come together early this year?
Really well. I think you look, in game 1, we gave a bunch of yards. I knew their quarterback was a really good player, but he knew that coming in, and he made some spectacular throws. They made some spectacular catches. But a lot of their plays, and one of the things you always want to look at, you know, like I said, there are a couple that we were really out of position, and they hit explosive plays. There were a lot we were in position, and they made great plays. Big difference between the two. So, you know, part of it is showing our guys, like, hey, we're there. We're in position. We just got to finish little things. It's not like we're way, way far away. And you saw that last week. Like I said, now we're going last week into saying, hey, for 95% of the game, we're in position making great plays. Now that last 5% of the game, we can't give up a critical errors like that. And, you know, and so I think the little teaching of the guys of the buy-in, but I think I've seen from our guys the understanding. I read something this week, too. I didn't realize. Like, I guess when you get your little – you guys probably – you know, like in the media. Like, I get them. We get the game sheets that you read.
Yeah.
I never paid attention to it as much as a coach. All right? Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
You got the game book. And so I didn't realize we have the least number of returning starters of any team in all of college football.
Only 2.
In all of college football, not in the Mountain West, not on the West Coast, in all of college football, we have the least amount of returning starters. And, you know, but for me, everybody was new kind of anyway, so I'm getting to know people. But when you look at that, so that's so many people, their first time putting on the uniform, starting in a game, being out there on the field, the lack of experience, that you're going to see that growth. So I'm actually very pleased with how we've played, considering the little amount of experience we're throwing out there on the field.
We're going to stick beside for our first commercial break, so plenty more to come here on the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. Coming up, We've talked enough about the skill guys. Let's talk about the trenches, some of the offensive and defensive linemen that have made the impact early in the season. Still plenty to go. It's the Dan Mullen Coaches Show here at Parkway Tavern 215 in Flamingo, and you're listening to the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield. All right, welcome back. It's the Dan Mullen Coaches Show here at Parkway Tavern 215 in Flamingo, along with Caleb Herring and our on-site producer, Jared Justice. I'm Matt Neverett. Joined as always, well, the show's named after him. It's the head coach, Dan Mullen, here for UNLV football, getting set to take on the UCLA Bruins this upcoming Saturday at Allegiant Stadium. 5 o'clock kickoff. It's going to be on CBS Sports Network, but you can listen to our radio call on ESPN 1100 AM and 100.9 FM. Starting at 4 o'clock for the Ted Wiens pregame show.
Yeah, don't you watch? You watch on TV,
yeah.
And you turn the volume down and then turn the radio
listen
on
to the home
listen
broadcast.
To the home
you
broadcast.
Go to SyncMyGame.com. There is a website. We do the
ads
for it, SyncMyGame.com. If you want to watch it on TV and listen to our radio broadcast.
That's how you do it.
We're a little biased, but that's how we think everybody should be doing it.
The best way to do it is to take your mobile device with you into Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah.
And then you can watch it live.
You should be, if you can't.
You know,
I would really like you at the game.
Yeah.
Honestly,
UNLVtickets.com, ESPN Radio Las Vegas, how you can listen to us. I also love the Varsity Network app. When I tell people that they want to listen to the game, I'll say, hey, Varsity Network app, it makes it easier for folks like my parents who barely have the cell phone. Get them the one app to
remember. Technology.
Yeah, exactly. But I digress. I want to talk a little bit more about the game against Sam Houston. While we look ahead to the game against UCLA this upcoming week, like I mentioned in the break to the last commercial, we talked a lot about the skill guys. But in terms of the big uglies, so to speak, the trenches, the offensive and defensive line, we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. You've had some rotating pieces, especially at the tackle positions. But in the second game of the year, last Friday against Sam Houston, we saw a little bit trimmed down rotation, so to speak, as far as the rotating bodies. How do you think that group is coming along as far as really settling into maybe 5 or 6 guys and then how that communication builds from there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you want to play as many guys as you can. To me, especially, you go last week's game, we tried to rotate a bunch, and a lot of the reason you're trying to rotate a bunch is you're down there in Houston. It was kind of humid.
Oh, yeah.
It was a humid night. And so, you know, for our guys to get the guys out there is critical. But up front, you do want to rotate guys. I know you want to keep continuity, but I think as people were coming out to practice and they started to notice, like, wow, coach, you play a lot of combinations on the offensive line at practice. And a lot of that, the reason we're doing that is because of in season. You know, one, I want us to be the ability to rotate, keep everybody healthy, fresh. If we do get injuries, guys are used to playing with different combinations of guys out there on the field. And so all of those things we want to do, and it carries over. Guys have earned playing time. We want to get them out there on the field and hopefully keep everybody fresh.
So you make some adjustments during the season as far as the depth, rotating guys in to have them ready to go when there's their time. But you also do other things during the season that are minor adjustments maybe, but maybe have a big-time effect schematically as well as for the big boys up front, helping them maintain weight throughout the season. One of them dealing with the elements like the Vegas heat. And one of the ways you've done that, I don't know if this is the intended purpose or what you were intending to do, was switching the practices from the morning operation to the evening operation. Those kind of coaching adjustments, those kind of scheduling adjustments, how do they impact the season? What are the pros and cons there?
Well, you know, obviously it's huge. I just think, you know, I know our schedule, our routine, how we do things. We've always been an afternoon practice team. These first couple weeks, it's still, we'll go after this game, we'll go back to the afternoon practice. We've been doing some early evening practices. You know, just with the heat, and that is, you know, and a lot of that just to battle the weather and keep everybody fresh, keep everybody's legs where they need to be, and I think that's a really important, critical thing for us, for the players to keep them healthy and fresh during the course of the year. Everybody, I want us to be fast on Saturday, but I also want us to be prepared, tough, and physical. So we work hard during the week. We try to find scientifically. You know, we track how far everybody goes, how fast they go up, every little detail, try to make sure we have a great performance come Saturday.
One of the guys who was really grateful for the switch, one of the big boys we talked about earlier, James Famenu, he enjoyed switching to the night shift schedule. He also enjoyed some playing time, a part of the rotation, obviously getting his feet wet as a Rebel. Coming in from probably the farthest of any Rebel, talking about where birthplace and all that stuff. But here he is talking with our Steve Colefield earlier this week about how he feels about the move to the afternoon practices.
I'm enjoying myself. I was dying in them heats, but it's just good. I like the time, like to be able to come in and get my body right for the afternoon. So I enjoy it.
Did you not like the morning? So I think a lot of people are morning people. They want to get to it.
I'm not someone that complains. Like, this is my sixth year in college, but I definitely prefer afternoon. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. After this practice today, what was the message from the coaches or Mullen? What did he tell you?
The biggest thing is execution and just doing our job. One thing I like about Coach Mullen is he doesn't overcomplicate things. He doesn't need to do like a rah-rah speech or anything special. It's, listen, do your job, know what you do, know how to do it, and execute. It's really that simple. That's what we did last game. That's what we're going to do even better this week.
Did you never like rah-rah speeches, or because you've heard them all, you're older, you don't like them?
I think it's because I've heard them all. And don't get me wrong, I love a good like speech, but it's like, I like the simplicity because nothing needs to be that, like, it doesn't need to be all that. Like, it really is that simple. And I like that because it's just straight to the point and I'm with it.
There's been a lot of talk about your coaching style and maybe what it would be like kind of coming out of retirement and getting adjusted to the roster that you have and the players that you have and what they prefer and how they receive coaching. What has been your method to your madness so far with this roster, and how have you adjusted?
Well, it is, and he mentioned it's the accountability of everybody. You know what I mean? We're going to – guys coming, especially in today's world, we have a lot of veteran players maybe that aren't veterans with us or veterans in their – older players. A lot of, as we said, a lot of new starters, but a lot of guys coming from the transfer portal. So as we put this whole roster together of looking at guys, and, you know, I do try to simplify it for them. Here's your job. Do your job. If you want to be good, right, don't like, you know, too many people want to tell me they want to be great. I'm like, show me you want to be great. Like, hey, here's the plan. I need you to do this, 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 this. But, coach, I can buy, just do these the simple things and you'll be great. Right? It's not that complicated. And I talk to our guys all the time. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of wishers in the world. There's, you know, but there's less wanters. Wanters are successful. Wanters go and do something about it. Wishers are sitting there laying around dreaming about it. Tell me what they could do or what they couldn't do. Be a wanter. Go up and get the job done. We lay out a simple plan. Here's what you need to do to be successful. And then if you don't follow it, don't complain that you're not successful. It was really simple. You need to do this. Right? You know, I mean, like, I got my chocolate chip cookies delivered to me here tonight, right? I mean, if I want to lose weight, I can't, if I want to lose weight, I can't be eating chocolate chip cookies all the time. But if I'm wishing I'm losing weight, I'm really thinking, boy, I could eat less, but I really love chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to eat a bunch of chocolate chip cookies.
We've all been there.
Yeah, we've definitely been there, and it seems like you've been there, especially in terms of dealing with the players on the field. I thought watching your interaction with Anthony Calandria leaving the field after the mentioned earlier the mistakes of that potential two-minute drive. You had an extended discussion with your quarterback walking off the field, and what I watched during that was not necessarily a guy yelling at his player, whatever the case may be, but I watched the body language of your quarterback completely receiving the coaching. And I think that was one of the things I look for. I'm a big body language guy, especially for a quarterback, to take the coaching, understand it on that long walk to the locker room. It seems like he has the right demeanor for it. What did you see from that interaction with him?
Well, it's just everything. Like you said it, though, it's the interaction. Listen, if you see me yelling and screaming, it's because we're not playing hard. Right? I mean, if we're not going hard or giving great effort, then I'll yell and scream. Because that's not acceptable, right? I mean, you can control your effort. Just go as hard as you can. That's simple. Control your effort. The coaching aspect of it is for us to coach. You know, and so yelling and screaming while we're coaching doesn't get a whole lot done. You know, you want to make sure we're teaching, instructing. Understand the interaction with the quarterback. I always want to have the interactions because I got to know what he thinks. It's really important for me. I'm standing on the sidelines with the headsets on, you know, just hanging out, having a good time. No one's trying to hit me usually, I don't think, on the sidelines, right? And he's out there, and there's big guys trying to hit him all over the place. So I got to think like him because he only has about 2.2 seconds till some 300-pound guy smacks him, you know? So I want to think the way he thinks and then get him to think the way I think so that we're kind of on the same page. Right, that you know, wouldn't be like those Avatar movies, right? Where like our little things zoom, like get together, and we're really like the coach and the quarterback act as one on the field.
I thought you mentioned this a few times in different ways, but I thought there were moments in the game where you felt on the sideline that you had an opportunity to seize control of the game. I think the three and out in the second half was one of those. Obviously, the dropped onside kick. What are those moments like for teaching and taking that next step as a program in those moments?
Well, it's frustrating for our guys because, you know, as you say, we look at the parts of the game, right? And, you know, in retrospect, I think we were pretty much in control the whole time. We got to see some other things, which is our defense go out there and completely slam the door, stopping them on fourth down over and over. And, you know, we gave up the two long fourth down plays, but we also stopped them three times on fourth down in the course of the game. So I think for the guys to see how good maybe we can be, right? And we're not there. And to think that we're there, to think that we have some answers, we certainly don't. However, if we take care of our business, if we can focus and be attention to detail and do everything, everybody, don't do anything special. Just do your job for all 60 minutes. But we could be pretty good. You know, we got a chance. And so I think the guys buy into that. They see that. They learn. And then they, you know, we want them. They want to talk about the little details. Like, our guys want to be great. They don't want to be good. They want to be great. And I said, okay, that's we were good last week. We're okay week one. We were good last week. Okay, if you want to be great, you're not going to miss a gap on fourth down. If you want to be great, you're going to make the pass breakup on fourth down. You're going to recover the onside kick. At which point then, you know, we probably, you know, you do those things, you're probably winning the game by 40, right? You know, and now the retrospect of things on side, you know, you look at the things. I get into red zone scoring. Sam Houston had four red zone possessions that netted 7 points. I mean, I can tell you their coach going in and say, hey guys, if we score in the red zone, we win the game. Oh, we lost by 17. We could have scored another 121 points in the red zone. So the coaching aspect of things, and I hate to make it boring for everybody, but there's these little things and details that go on within the game, little parts of the game and things that help you win that if you really focus on and you pay attention and you dominate in, you're going to be extremely successful.
There he is, Coach Mullen, here on the Dan Mullen Radio Show, live from Parkway Tavern, brought to you by EOS Fitness. Get out of the sideline and into EOS Fitness, a proud partner of UNLV, featuring premium amenities, including their turf functional training area, Move EOS Cinema, open 24/7, and much more. Join now for as low as $9.99 per month at joineos.com. EOS Fitness, where there's a will. Coming up on the next segment of the Dan Mullen Radio Show, we have a conversation with the Defensive Player of the Week in the Mountain West Conference, Amaris Brown, coming down with some big plays for the Rebel defense. We've got that and much more on the other side of this quick break. You're listening to the Dan Mullen Radio Show on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield.
All right, we're back here on the Dan Mullen Coaches Show, live from Parkway Tavern, 215 at Flamingo. These raffle prizes going fast. K-Warn helmets, the Modelo UNLV crossover mirror giveaway, T-shirts, hats, visors, tickets to games. Come on out. Coaches Show Thursday nights, weeks where there's UNLV games. So don't come out next week. Bye week next weekend, so we will not be here. Unless you want to come hang out at this lovely Parkway location anyway. But come on out every Thursday where there is a UNLV game on the Saturday, 7 to 8 here, Parkway Tavern, 215, and Flamingo. Matt Nevert along with Caleb Herring and UNLV head coach Dan Mullen. And we're talking a little bit about the reigning, newly announced Mountain West Defensive Player of the Week in Amaris Brown. Last week, he had his second interception. UNLV with 5 picks on the year, second in all of the NCAA. Brown and LeTerrence Welch are each tied for the NCAA lead with 2 picks each. Brown also tacking on 3 tackles for loss, a pair of sacks in the win against Sam Houston, and our very own Steve Cofield got a chance to catch up with him earlier in the week, talking about his experience at USF in their game last week where they demolished Boise State, how Coach Mullen recruited him here to UNLV, and his thoughts on his position coach, Akeem Davis. Here's Amaris Brown with Steve Cofield.
I actually wasn't surprised. You know, I played with most of them guys on that team. You know, we'd have been, you know, two years back-to-back, we played out of Alabama and came up short, you know, just by, you know, in the last couple of minutes or whatever. So I wasn't surprised by any chance. I knew it was possible, you know. But, you know, coming from South Florida, coming here, you know, I don't look at it as, you know, no regret or anything like that. I look at it as a blessing, you know. Everything, you know, happened for a reason. And, you know, God wanted me to be here at UNLV instead of South Florida for some reason. And, you know, I'm just here to, you know, fill in that spot.
You go on the portal, Mullen talks to you personally, right? Mm-hmm. What's the pitch?
Honestly, it really wasn't no pitch, honestly. Like, you know, he knew the ability I had. He knew the experience that I had. And you know, vice versa. I knew the experience he had, you know, as far as in the SEC and winning national championships. I've had family members who I know played for him, you know, back then a couple years ago. So, you know, just all of that connected into one played a big role into why I came here to UNLV.
You had no hook to Akeem Davis before this?
Nothing at all. Not until my visit here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was he like on the visit? And what's he like as a coach during the games especially?
Yeah. Honestly, he's been since my visit in December or January, whenever that was, till now, he's been the same guy. You know, he always keep it straightforward. He's not going to lie to you, you know. And I feel like the biggest thing for me about him is he's big on faith. You know, he's not pushing it on us, trying to force it on us or anything like that. But, you know, he does mention it. He does bring it up, you know, how important it is to just, you know, keep your faith in God and just, you know, leave it to God and he going to handle it, you know. And as far as the sideline during the games, like I said, he's the same guy that he is at practice, energetic, you know, yelling, probably the loudest person out there. You know, he going to get on you. He going to make it, you know, making sure you're doing your job the right way and everything like that. But, yeah, man, I love Coach Davis.
You were probably coming off the field after the pick six, and you didn't see this, but he starts running down the sidelines. He's like, that's who we are, that's who we are. And then he and Burfict, like, jump in the air to chest bump, and I'm like, my God, the thud between those two guys?
Yeah.
It's pretty colossal.
I haven't seen that. I know it's probably crazy, though. Burfict is a big guy.
And Coach Amaris Brown, obviously producing some early results for you and your coaching staff here through the first 2 weeks. Always interested to talk to coaches about how and when they select guys to maybe say, hey, the nickelback role could be a perfect fit for you, your size, your speed, your physicality. What was it that stood out to you right away about Amaris Brown that led you to believe he'd be a great fit at that position in this defense?
Well, one of the things you look at, especially if you're going to play the nickel, you got to have corner cover skills and you got to have safety physicality. So he's a guy that is a physical player, has the size, has the physical style to his game, but played a lot of corner at South Florida. So had that background and experience. So, you know, he had that crossover mentality. That's the guy that you're going to create the mismatches with. So, you know, you got to be a unique player, and he has that skill set. And, you know, and his energy, his demeanor every day has been unbelievable. Like his leadership, he'll be a game captain for us this week in this week's game.
Amaris Brown, the captain, back-to-back weeks with an interception, the reigning Mountain West Defensive Player of the Week. Here's hoping that he adds a third interception, or third game in
maybe
a row
fourth.
With an interception.
Let's
hopefully, multiple. Why not just the one? Well, coming up, we're going to get really deep in the trenches. No, not the offensive and defensive line. We've got a former Rebel quarterback in Caleb Herring. We have an offensive whiz in Dan Mullen. We're going to get really technical and talk about some of Caleb's favorite route concepts and some of the real high-level things that he's liked about this UNLV offense in the early stages of the year. Buckle up, put on your school caps. We're going back to the classroom with Caleb Herring and Dan Mullen. Coming up next, you're listening to the Dan Mullen Coaches Show here on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield. All right, cruising through the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. We're here live at Parkway Tavern 215 in Flamingo. We're on 1230 The Game on the radio side this week with the Las Vegas Aces taking on the Minnesota Lynx at T-Mobile Arena right now as we speak. We're joined, as always, by the namesake of the show, head football coach for UNLV, Dan Mullen. 38-21 winners last weekend over Sam Houston, looking ahead to the matchup. A highly contested matchup between UCLA and UNLV this Saturday. Allegiant Stadium, 5 o'clock kickoff. UNLVtickets.com for tickets and more info. Come sell out Allegiant as the Rebels try to make it three straight to start the 2025 season. Well, Coach, throughout these first couple of weeks, a lot of folks have been curious about what this offense was going to look like under yourself, offensive coordinator Corey Dennis, and the quarterback combination. A lot of the new pieces involved on the skill side as well. But now we've started to see an identity start to form through two games. And Caleb and I had talked throughout the last 2 weeks about some of his favorite parts, and I don't know that I've seen Caleb react in our almost two seasons of doing games together like he did on D'Angelo Irvin's touchdown catch on the far corner of the end zone. Caleb, walk us through what you saw on that route concept and why you liked it so much.
Well, I think I liked it because it exemplified a few things. One, good quarterback play. I think that was one of the plays where Calandria actually comes up and makes an adjustment at the line of scrimmage. Not sure exactly what he barked out, but it was pretty clear coming out of that timeout he liked the look he had.
Yeah,
he got to what is my favorite route concept to throw out of 3-by-1. We had a name for it back when I played. We just called it Dino Wycore. Trey left Dino Wycore. That would have been what we would have called the play. But it put one of the best routes versus man coverage on display. And for me, it was number 3 running a corner against man coverage. And D'Angelo Irvin timed it up perfect, worked his release well enough in the short field. The ball was on the money, on time. right in the corner of the end zone. Couldn't draw it up any better. But like I said, quarterback getting to the call, receivers executing the call, and then one of my favorite man beaters of all time all happened on one play. That was what I saw.
Yeah.
From your perspective on the sideline, how'd you see it?
Yeah, it's really the same thing. I think the we did. I'm not going to go through what we call it. But
do you know why, Cor, for anyone listening?
There we go. Yeah. And, but we did. We had a play call. We saw the man coverage. Anthony checked us into that play. It was third and goal. So it was a big play. We needed to come away with points in the red zone. Third and goal. I think it was coming off a penalty.
Right.
There was a penalty the play before on them. And so I think they came out. We had a play called. They came out with a completely different look. Anthony does a nice job changing the play, get us into that protection, get us into that pass route. You got the route concept right. And the key to the route, D'Angelo Irvin did a great job. A lot of the guys that run that route, they want to go too quick to the corner. You really got to sell the vertical. And he did a great job pushing his guy vertical deep enough to then get the foot in the ground, slam it to the corner, and Anthony did a great job throwing it to that back pylon where you just saw. I mean, it was a fingertip catch. He caught it. It's him or nobody. He catches it, gets the foot down, and the touchdown. And it is great, actually. That's where you want to come. As you talk about what's the personality of our offense, we're still learning. We're still figuring it all out, if you will, like, you know, of how guys perform in games. But you're starting to see what our offense is going to be. We're still learning. Everyone's learning each other. But I think it's the trust that we have in the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks know they have that flexibility, that opportunity to get us into certain play calls at certain times, and we took advantage of it in that situation.
I think it also goes to the relationship. And all the great offenses, there's always a good relationship between the quarterback and the coordinator. And with that, there's a certain amount of trust and a certain amount of, I guess, finish my sentence. When I call something,
it's
you know what I'm
it's
thinking.
It's the avatar thing, right?
Yeah.
In the plug in,
right? Yeah,
like you're just, and you guys.
We're going to have dragons out here next, right?
You know.
What does it feel like for you, you know, your coordinator experience, now kind of stepping back as the head coach, also with the new communication system that wasn't around the last time you were not the coordinator?
I think they're happy. I don't get to talk to the quarterbacks. Corey talks to the quarterbacks. I think that's probably good.
That's our job to talk to you.
Yeah, you know, he gets to talk to the quarterbacks. But, no, I think it is. You got into it at halftime. I think it is that trust and that communication of and understanding what we're trying to accomplish, right? And when quarterbacks come off the field, I always ask my number one question is why? You know, like, hey, why'd you do that? They're like, what should I have done? I said, well, what should you have done is irrelevant. I want to know, right, what you should have done is what I think. Why did you do what you did? Because we want to get that deal. And so I think all of our quarterbacks and the communication, you know, it's, you know, whether it with Anthony and Alex Orji and, you know, being locked in and what's going on, what we're seeing in the course of a game with Corey upstairs. And now in new technology, you have the video on the sideline. That's a new deal for me. I never had that part. But the talking to quarterbacks, I don't know. Everybody used to watch me. Sometimes I'd talk, I just yell from the sidelines and scream. So, like, Coach, you've always had that quarterback. Coach, the quarterback communication, you just screaming from the sidelines. Now you have that aspect of it, which is a pretty unique deal. And so the trust, as you said, the trust of the communication, getting everybody on the same page, right, of why did you do that? Hey, I got to that play, as you said, Coach, because it's man coverage. We're on the goal line. It's third and five. Third and goal from the five. I got man coverage on number three. I want to throw the corner route to him. Good. Call it. Then if you explain things that way, I'll let guys check any play they want. You can call out the whole game if you want. Like, I just want to know your whys, you know, and that is the most important thing in the trust that you go build between coach and quarterback.
Coming up, we'll have our final segment of the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. We've got our final couple of raffle prize giveaways for our local audience here at Parkway Tavern 215 in Flamingo. And we're going to get you set for kickoff, UNLV and UCLA this Saturday, 5 o'clock Pacific at Allegiant Stadium, unlvtickets.com, to come on out and join us in person. We'll close up shop next. Final segment coming up next on the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. You're listening to the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield. All right, wrapping things up, final segment here of the Dan Mullen Coaches Show. UNLV getting set to take on UCLA this Saturday, 5 o'clock Pacific kickoff. at Allegiant Stadium, UNLVtickets.com. If you haven't already purchased your tickets, our Ted Wiens pregame show starts an hour before kickoff at 4 on the Varsity Network app and the ESPN Las Vegas Radio Network. Well, UNLV taking on UCLA. Interesting matchup here between Mountain West and Big Ten. UCLA coming off of a loss, 43-10 in their opener against Utah. Really stout Utah team overall. This UCLA team led by second-year head coach Deshaun Foster, former All-American running back as a UCLA Bruin. And a lot of headlines, we'll say, in the offseason made by their acquisition of Nico Iamaleava.
There you go. There we go. Got it.
We're practicing.
I learned that one on TV last year. I had that down week one.
There you go.
You're doing college football final like Matt Berry, and Joey and the guys at ESPN. You had to get that one down pretty quick. So I got Nico's name.
I was excited to ask you about it because it's not a guy that you had called a game of his per se while you were at ESPN, but you had to talk about him plenty. This was a Tennessee team that he led last year that made it all the way to the CFP, and he was really good as a freshman starting his first games. But when you get the look at Nico last year on TV from afar, what did you think?
Well, you see the talent he has, right? And the talking to the people, I've never got to see him live in person. You get to see him on TV. Throws a tremendous arm talent. Throws a great deep ball, right? And you got to see it a lot last year at Tennessee. If you watch their offense, run, and they're going to launch that bad boy down the field. He throws a pretty deep ball. The thing I think that's interesting with Nico, though, is his size, 6'6", right? Has a big build. But then you watch his athleticism is deceiving. He's a better athlete than you think. And you watch him in that Ohio State playoff game, the tough he's not afraid to be physical. Right? So here he is, this big guy, you think, oh, he's a pocket passer and he has all this arm talent. But then you watch him move and he's a better athlete and he's more physical with the ball in his hand than you think. So it brings a tough challenge for our guys.
And he was the leading rusher last week as well for UCLA. So
there you go. That's why.
That came to the forefront right off the bat. For you and your coaching staff, now with two games full of tape on yourself, you've got one game of tape on your opponent. Where do you strike?
They got to see twice as much of us as we did.
But where do you strike the balance as a staff as far as the opponent? Obviously, you want to scout and look ahead to what they may do. But how much self-scouting do you do after 2 weeks of game tape?
Well, you're always doing it. You're looking at what you do well, what you did poorly, how people attacked us, where our deficiencies were, who's playing well. It's all new players for us. Are we putting guys in position to be successful? I think all that's important. And so you take all of those things, combine all of that together. The next big thing that you look at is the team you're playing. Obviously, UCLA, not the result they wanted last week, but I go back to us in week one. We found a way to win. We weren't playing Utah, but thankfully, we found a way to win. Utah's an excellent football team. They get a lot of talent.
Top 25 as of the other day.
Yeah, and physicality. They're a physical football team. And so, they're going to come out of that game kind of like us in week one, saying, hey, we didn't play our best, but we're going to make a huge jump. Now, like you said, Nico's a new quarterback for them. A lot of new faces on their roster, a lot of new faces on the defense. They had a bunch of guys drafted into the NFL last year. So, they're kind of finding their way around, trying to make that big jump from week one to week two that I felt we made. Now what we got to do, and I'm on our guys, we got to make as big a jump from one to two. We got to make that same big jump from two to three to go, compete against a talented Big Ten team.
Talented Big Ten team. What you can see on the film, playmakers, Anthony Woods at running back, some explosive guys on the edges for Nico to throw it to and deal it to.
A lot of speed.
A lot of shifts and motions on the offensive side. We talked about the defensive communication and how it improved from week zero to week one. How important is it going to be with this style of offense that the Bruins bring?
Well, that's going to be huge. They're going to be big physical up front. They got game breakers all over the field. And, so you got to be disciplined. If you are not in your coverage leverage, they're going to expose you and have the opportunity to make a big play. And, when you're in these games, you want to make them earn it. Everybody, you want to make people earn their way down the field. We don't want to give the exploit. You saw it last week when we made them earn it, Sam Houston couldn't do anything. We gave them the easy ones with the mistakes. They got easy touchdowns. So we want to make them have to earn it all the way down the field defensively. And then we got the same thing for them on the other side of the ball. They had some miscommunications last week against Utah. I'm sure they want to get cleaned up. You can't sit there and say, hey, okay, we expect them to make mistakes again. we got to go execute. Don't expect them to make the mistakes. We got to go execute and perform.
Coach, we got about a minute left. Last question for you. What is the number one area that you talked about wanting to make that same jump from week one to week two, week two to week three? What is the one area that you think your team needs to make the biggest jump in this week to come out with a victory?
I think number of people at Allegiant Stadium on Saturday from our Rebel fans being making all the noise, creating home field environment for us. We had an unbelievable crowd in week one. I want to be twice as good in our second home game as we were in our first home game, right? So I think, what were we at, 25,000?
Just about.
So we got to double down. Let's get at least 50,000, right? We're in Vegas, double down. We're going to double down. We need 50,000 Rebel fans there screaming, making noise for us, creating the environment. We're going to do a better – we'll put on a better show. We want the crowd there, the excitement, the energy. I want everything. I want everybody – this team to come up and take another huge step forward for the fans. The fans come out, support their team. Everybody buy in. Everybody enjoy it. Everybody come enjoy the show. And everybody here in the city of Las Vegas to get this win. It's not just our team. It's not just UNLV. It's the whole city of Las Vegas we're going to try to get this win for on Saturday.
Well, there he is, everybody. Head coach Dan Mullen as the Rebels get set to take on UCLA. It'll be a 5 o'clock kickoff at Allegiant Stadium, UNLVtickets.com. For Caleb Herring, for Steve Cofield, for Jared Justice and Griffin Kemp, I'm Matt Neverett saying thanks so much for tuning in. Rebels, Bruins, Saturday, Allegiant Stadium. Be there, UNLVtickets.com, or check us out on ESPN Las Vegas. We appreciate you tuning in, and until Saturday, so long.
Been listening to the Dan Mullen Coaches Show, brought to you by Parkway Tavern, the official home of the Rebels on the road, and the Dan Mullen Coaches Show, and by Findlay Chevrolet. Findlay Chevrolet is home of the number one volume Chevy dealer west of Texas. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the UNLV Sports Network.